I appreciate the fact that the Iraqi government is anxious to get security inside the capital of their country. It's a good sign. It's a good sign that there's a sense of concern and anxiety.
Okay, well then I guess all the death every day is even a better sign, right? This man is mad, just nuts. Oh no, you're not going to start this early. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to the program. A quick thank you to Brad Friedman for sitting in for me last Friday. Molly has given Kathy and me something that one of the effects of it is laryngitis to the point where it's just impossible to talk. It's not like we're deathly ill. We're not. It's just this persistent cough, and last Friday, Kathy said, do you want me to get a sub for the program? I said, no, I'm all right. I can do it. Anyway, thanks to Brad Friedman of bradblog.com for sitting in Friday while I try to get my voice back. It's either laryngitis, and it's not throat cancer, I know that, or polyps on my vocal cords. I've been checked for that several times. But it could be something from the Bush crime family. They may be putting poison gas into our house. Now, wait a minute, that's one of the signs of paranoid delusion. So wait a minute, that sounds like Dick Cheney. Oh, God. It was over before it really began. I'm talking about the Senate debate on the Iraqi resolution today. Did you watch that? It morphed into the Warner Levin measure or bill, which failed to gain the Senate the 60 votes in the Senate needed to even be debated. So debate will be stalled at best, probably for weeks, while helicopters keep being shot out of the sky, hours, and the troops keep being maimed and killed, hours, and more Iraqis die, theirs. This is madness. Last night on I don't know if you all get Turner Classic Movies, or is it TCM, Turner Classic Movies, right? They're playing 31 days of Academy Award films, somehow connected to Academy Awards, either director, best picture, actors, whatever. Last night, they had the film from 1965 that was nominated twice in, I think, 66 and 68, once by the French and once by the Italians as the best foreign language film in those 2 years. The Battle for Algiers. If you have not seen that, or the Battle in Algiers, Battle in Algiers, is that what it was? It's about the how the Algerians made an attempt to get their freedom back after 135 years of domination by the French. And the movie, if you're not familiar with it, combines filmmaking with documentary footage. And I read someplace that it is recommended viewing for any field commander that goes to Iraq, anyone who's going to be in charge of troops, from lieutenants all the way up, because it explains fully what, cinematically, yes, but fully, how an insurgency just simply cannot be defeated. You can do whatever the hell you want to do. It can't be defeated by an occupying force. It just simply can't. And it also shows, you know, the French were great at torture and guillotining people. When they captured insurgents, it was very clear, and you hear the characters talk about this in French, but there's subtitles in English, about how to interrogate to get the answers they desire. It's an unbelievable film. If you haven't, I know a lot of you have seen it, The Battle in Algiers, or Battle in Algiers. What is it, Kathy? Battle in or Battle for? I guess it's Battle in. That's right, you fell asleep. Never mind. Kathy's of the mind that once you have seen that nothing can compare with what's going on in Iraq. Why should she watch a film that's 40 years old about an insurgency that happened 60 years ago when what's going on in Iraq is 10 times as bloody? But it's an unbelievable movie. If you haven't seen it, you should see it. A couple of quick items here. We have some sound for you tonight, too. The moron had a press briefing after his meeting with the cabinet this morning, and we've got a little bit of sound from that. Schumer and Reid, two stalwart Democratic senators from the Senate floor debate on the Iraq resolution, and Just and bits and pieces tonight. We're not going to overwhelm you with sound like we do so many Monday nights. Let me see what else. Any other business? I guess not. Don't forget, go to novamradio.com and sign up. All right, we need you as a founding member. Definitely need you as a founding member. Just an item here that caught my eye. I think our senior correspondent sent it to us. I'm not sure, but it's from the Guardian of the UK. A Saudi Arabian court has convicted and sentenced 20 foreigners to receive lashes and spend several months in prison for attending a party where alcohol was served and men and women danced. This is according to a Saudi newspaper. The kingdom's religious police arrested 433 foreigners, including more than 240 women, for attending what is referred to as an impudent party in Jeddah. It did not, that's the city, did not identify the foreigners, give their nationalities, or say when the party took place. The judge sentenced the 20 who have been sentenced so far to 3 to 4 months in prison and ordered them to receive an unspecified number of lashes. They were charged with and convicted of drinking, arranging for an impudent party, mixed dancing, and shooting a video for the party. This is what the Christian Dominionists want, too. You see, this is how insane. I'm sure you know that the hypocrisy in this form of Sunni Islam in Saudi Arabia, the blatant hypocrisy that the Saudi royal family follows. They allegedly, they believe in a strict interpretation of Islam under which alcohol is banned and meetings between unmarried men and women and are forbidden and women can't drive or vote or this or that. You know, these are the moderate regimes in the Middle East that Bush is always talking about. Now, when the Saudis, during the first Gulf War, when Norman Schwarzkopf, the third or the second or junior, whatever, when he handled that war, and Colin Powell was the Secretary of Defense, the Saudis all fled. All the Saudis who were wealthy enough to get out of Saudi Arabia, the Saudi royal family, they all took off, went to Egypt, and stayed in resorts while the Americans fought and died and committed all sorts of catastrophic wipeouts of Iraqi soldiers, but the Saudis took off and they went to foreign pleasure pots, including Egypt, the South Seas, where they drink and screw and do whatever they want to do. But I guess it doesn't count if they're not right there in the holy country of Saudi Arabia. The hypocrisy of these people, of the Saudis and these fundamental Muslims, is as severe as the hypocrisy of, for the most part, most fundamentalists or dominionist Christians. A pox on all of them. A pox on all of them. Lashes. Prison for going to a party. Jesus, God. Governor Rick Perry in Texas. I wish Molly Ivins were alive for this one, huh? You know, he issued an executive order a couple of days ago. He's been asked to rescind it now. It would mandate vaccinations for girls against the sexually transmitted virus that causes cervical cancer. A Republican state senator, a woman named Jane Nelson, who's chairwoman of the Senate's Health and Human Services Committee, said lawmakers should have been allowed to hear from doctors, scientists, and patients before Perry issued by decree this mandate. Nelson said, Senator Nelson, State Senator Nelson, Republican, said, quote, "This is not an emergency. It needs to be discussed and debated," end quote. What happened was Perry ordered the Texas Health and Human Services Commission to start giving the Gardasil vaccine to girls entering sixth grade starting in September 2008, September, a year from this September. Now, the fact is the vaccine does protect, so at least that's what research has shown, that the vaccine protects girls against strains of the human papillomavirus? Yeah, the papilloma that causes most cases of cervical cancer, not all, but most. And the Texas legislature has no authority to repeal this executive order. But it raises all sorts of issues. The reason a lot of people are complaining, the religious fundamentalists, the Christian fundamentalists, dominionists, is because they say this will encourage girls to go have sex. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm not crazy, I'm just a little.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy. Standing tough under stars and stripes, we can tell this dream's in sight. You've got to admit it at this point in time that it's clear. The future looks bright.
21 past the hour. So anyway, back to this thing in Texas. Governor Rick Perry, by executive order, has decreed that starting September 2008, all young women, girls, starting age 8 or entering 6th grade, I believe, not age 8, starting, let me see, what does it say here? Yeah, girls entering 6th grade, so that would make them about 11. As of September 2008, must have this virus against the vaccination against the human papillomavirus that causes most cases of cervical cancer. Now, part of the resistance is legit, I think, coming from parents who are saying, "Wait a second, you know." Of course, you can make the argument that that schools do have requirements. It varies from state to state about the inoculation record of your child. And I don't want to get into the thimerosal thing or all that stuff about vaccinations. You know, I just don't. I happen to believe in vaccinations. Molly has certainly had her share. We checked with her, a pediatrician, before we got her injected with the flu vaccine, because that's the one that usually carries thimerosal now, and was assured that it did not. And don't send me an email and tell me that my pediatrician is lying to me, because I trust her completely. But I happen to believe in vaccinations, because to me it's homeopathic medicine. It's purely homeopathic. You know, if your immune system is activated with a part of a virus, a part of a dead virus, so that if you are exposed to this disease, your body can recognize it and fight. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Trust me, I've had 6 children, and all of them went through their complete immunization requirements. Now, those immunization requirements have changed over the past 35 years. Oh, my God, yes. Molly has certainly gotten more vaccines than, say, Chris, who's 28, and Molly is 2.5. But so I don't have a problem as a parent with getting my child vaccinated. I simply don't. I think it's a good idea. I think it gives, on the other hand, I don't necessarily think that every child, if someone objects to it, then the parents should have the right not to do it if they're willing to roll the dice on their child's life. There is the so-called herd effect, where if you have, I don't know, pick a number, 1,000 people in a population pool and 900 have been vaccinated, the chances are the other 100 are not going to get the disease, because it's not going to take foot or take hold inside that population group. So, you know, it's your call as a parent. I happen to believe in vaccines. I really do. Going all the way back to when was the smallpox vaccine? They came up with an early vaccine back in the 1700s, didn't they? I think they did. Scratching someone's skin with pus from cowpox. So it you know, whatever. There's several things at play here, though. The people I think that are objecting the most are two groups, people who want that decision left to them as the parent, and religious conservatives who say, no, if my daughter gets this shot, then she'll go out and have sex, which to me is just absolutely obscenely insane. But that's what a lot of these right-wingers are saying. They're saying, I have no control over my daughter. The devil's going to get inside her drawers and make her go hump the nearest 12-year-old. You know, this is what's wrong with you people? Really, what's wrong with you? Now, the overarching fact of this story is that this vaccine is produced by the Merck & Company, which is one of the biggest contributors to Republican political campaigns in the history of the human race, and certainly to Rick Perry's. So it's not that Rick Perry recommended that there be study on the papillomavirus and maybe a generic brand or some way to protect people. It's just all of a sudden he makes the order, probably because Merck & Company said, come on, Rick, we've given you millions of dollars. We give all you goddamn Republicans more money than you could possibly spend. It's payback time. Make it mandatory here in Texas, because if Texas does it, then the rest of these half-witted southern states will do it. And then we can get California, and then we get Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ohio. You see what I'm saying? This story, there's something about this that just stinks. It just, I don't know, it just smells bad to me. And yet, I'm a great believer in vaccines for a child. Go figure. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
I don't know what to do. Oh, and I don't know what to do. Well, my doctor gave me up.
It'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Twenty-six before the hour. Very quickly here, David in Denver sent me an email. Also on Turner Classic Music, Turner Classic Movies this week, Wednesday. Is the original Inherit the Wind, the one about the Scopes Monkey Trial. It is relevant today and a really fine way to spend a couple of hours. Maybe your listeners would enjoy it. I haven't seen that one in a long time either. Scopes Monkey Trial, Inherit the Wind. That is an excellent representation of what is still going on in this country, even though that trial occurred back in the 20s. Oh, and I forgot to mention, we want to welcome the listeners in Eureka, California, who are listening to the program on KGOE. KGOE 1480 AM. I hope the ride isn't too bumpy for you tonight in terms of what you hear on this program. I do get carried away. I've probably already irritated a bunch of you, but it's just going to get worse. I'm sorry. But it's also very entertaining radio, so welcome to KGOE in Eureka, California, 1480 AM. We're very happy to have you as an affiliate. Huh? One more thing about the Battleville Jeers. This is from Nick in Oakland, California. Please mention that if anyone thinks that torture works to defeat an insurgency or guerrilla force, they should watch this film. Torture was used by the French army to the extent that the soldiers themselves were repulsed and demoralized as a result of participating in it, and eventually the French population turned against the French cause. I wonder if John Yoo and the other proponents of torture in Iraq have seen the film. Nick in Oakland, California. Thanks, Nick. I do want to get, if we have time tonight, to what Hillary Rodham Clinton said in February 1st as she addressed the AIPAC convention in New York. I would suggest, if you're a Hillary Rodham Clinton fan and think you're going to go vote for her, good for you, you ought to check out her speech. It's at clinton.senate.gov, clinton.senate.gov, When you get to our main page, click on News, scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the text of her speech. It is absolutely shocking. She sounds exactly like George Bush where it concerns Iran, where it concerns the United States' willingness to go to war for Israel. Now, it's one thing to have allies. I think Israel's a great ally. I think Germany's a great ally. I think Japan's a great ally. But it's something else again when we are in a situation that we are in the Middle East, and then you read the statement that Hillary Rodham Clinton made on February 1st as she addressed AIPAC, the American-Israel Political Action Committee. You should read it. Go to clinton.senate.gov and click on News, and then scroll down, and you'll find her the text of her speech. And it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely shocking. It sounds like Bush. It sounds like Jerry Falwell. It sounds like every right-winger in this country. No equivocation, no expectation of Israel getting serious about negotiations with the people with whom they need to negotiate, the Israelis. Just disillusionment after disillusionment, I swear to God. Let's do some phone calls real quick. Ron is calling from Wellsboro, PA. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Doing all right.
I was listening to the news earlier, and they started talking about the federal budget that Bush is putting through, and I was like driving, and I just started screaming. I just literally started screaming. I'm wondering when people are going to like stop him. You know, he's pushing for something like $500 billion. He wants $170 billion more for the military.
Oh, I know.
Right now we're leveraged at, what is it, $429 billion for, like, veterans, $100 billion unbudgeted, and $563 billion. That's half the federal budget.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
I don't know. I had to call because I'm like, oh, when are people going to stop him? When?
Well, they're
when?
Not. They're not. This is what Eisenhower warned against. It has become a monster, this military-industrial complex in this country. We could have the most effective military for defense in the history of the human race with one-tenth the budget that has gone to the military over the past 30 years. One-tenth. One-twentieth. This is utterly and absolutely insane. While this country goes right down the crapper,
where he wants $2.29 trillion, half of that. What did I say? $900 billion. Yeah, it's like $1 trillion just for the VA, for unbudgeted spending in the military, and $563 billion, half of our money for this. I heard you start talking about Hillary and the AIPAC thing. I'm like going, they're grooming her to be the front runner? I mean, come on, what country do we live in?
I don't know. I had to
say something because you know what? I'm sorry. I kind of wanted to use your show for a platform. Come on, people, it's time.
Well,
we got to do something.
Yeah,
I swear to God.
I know.
But that's all I have to say.
All right, Ron, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. The relationship between the United States and Israel is a relationship that draws some people together and provides a gulf between others in this country. It's so gotten out of hand. I'm a supporter of Israel. If Israel were a true democracy, which it is not, it simply isn't a democracy. It is a religious state, in its own way, not that dissimilar from Iran, from Saudi Arabia, which are also religious states. Now, don't send me an email and say, well, the Israelis don't behead people for shoplifting. Okay, and the Saudis do. I understand. But the statements made by Hillary Clinton at the AIPAC a meeting or whatever it was that she addressed. And I know that there are constituencies in this country that have to be addressed by American politicians, but this is ridiculous. This is absolutely, screamingly, mind-bendingly, obscenely ridiculous. So you can go read it yourself. I'm not going to draw, and I understand that she might be on this program. Oh, God. That's when I get the emails, Kathy, that'll say, "You cowardly son of a bitch, you didn't bust up on," you know, if I do book her on this program, if she is on this program, I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right, what else? This is from Simon, our correspondent from the UK. He says, "I believe in judging politicians by their votes, not their words. Based on that, today's Senate vote tells you all you need to know about the Republican Party and their supposed newfound voice against Bush's escalation. All these Republican senators who've been grandstanding the past couple of weeks about their toothless, non-binding resolutions condemning the surge, and what do? They all vote against even debating it. Suppose one of the bills with real teeth," Simon writes, "makes it onto the floor, as Feingold, Kennedy, and others have demanded. I can already picture all these useless Republicans lining up to spew their talking points. One sad commentary about all this: the Republicans are demonstrating how to be an opposition party. If only the Democratic leadership would pay attention." Yeah, what do you remember when, just a few short months ago, when every single time an issue would come up that anyone with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs would understand that the Democrats had to resist, and they, "Oh, no, well, we don't want to, maybe when something important comes up." And everything that the Republicans don't want, they organize and they say, "No, hell no, screw you, it's not going to happen." So, yeah, Simon's right. Sometimes I hate the fact that I'm a Democrat. I wish I could be something other than a Democrat. But I'll never become a Green, I don't think. And I'll tell you why. I heard this on what was it, on the Situation Room today. Yeah, I was watching that. And James Carville was on with some right wing halfwit, and Carville made a very interesting point about Ralph Nader and whether it's true or not. I don't care. I'm not going to get into the debate. I'm just going to say what Carville said. Nader picked up 90,000 votes in Florida in 2000, Gore lost by roughly 500 votes when it was finally declared, when that crazy bitch Secretary of State declared it over, and the Supreme Court backed her. 90,000 votes went to Al Gore, Ralph Nader. So the point that Carville was making today was the greenest president in the history of this republic, certainly the modern history of this republic, Al Gore, was defeated by the Green Party. And Carville made the point, are all the people that voted for Nader or Green candidates, are they happy now? Especially with the report that came out from the United Nations, climate, whatever, we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the program tonight. But Carville was saying something to the effect that if irony still existed here in the age of Bush, we should look at what happened in Florida with all those votes for the Green candidate against Al Gore and just, I don't know, pull what remaining hairs out we all still have left in our head. By the way, Simon reminds me that it was... Paul was chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the first Gulf War. It was Cheney who was the Secretary of Defense.
Neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Okay, all right. So I'm getting emails now from people who normally like the program and enjoy the point of view I take. Giving me hell about the Nader, Gore, Green, Florida ballot thing. Look, I understand. I'm just kind of tossing out there what Carville said. I just get very angry that back in 2000, let me put it this way, that back in 2000, Nader wasn't smart enough, I guess, or able to see in the future to the degree that he could have seen what was happening. And nobody has done more to protect Americans in the past 40 years than Ralph Nader. There's no argument about that. But why could he have not been a little prescient enough to be able to come to the conclusion that, A, he didn't have an ice cube's chance in hell of being elected, and, B, Al Gore, contrary to the conventional wisdom, was not exactly like George Bush, and that he, Ralph Nader, would throw his support to Al Gore because the survival of the planet was at stake. That's all. That's all. I don't want to get into this green Democrat thing. I really, really don't. I'm so sick of it. I really am. And it just causes a lot of crap between people who would normally be on the same page, like Democrats who support or don't support Hillary. Or the Democrats that do support or don't support everything the state of Israel does. The Nader-Gore thing is something that reasonably intelligent Democrats simply can't talk about. So let's drop it, okay? Thank you. Monty says, sorry if I missed the part you were saying, but I just wanted to make sure you know that Merck, the makers of the Gardasil vaccine, are also the makers of Vioxx. Merck has been very busy denying any wrongdoing and fighting and winning cases with the Vioxx. Yeah, Vioxx was the one that has been pulled off the market, resulted in lots of people dying, and now they have Gardasil. So, you know, you just don't know what to believe, what to do anymore. The pharmaceutical companies are protected by Congress. The pharmaceutical companies are absolutely corrupt because they base their development of new products, for the most part, on marketing, what their marketing experts tell them, not what their scientists tell them. Do you have restless leg syndrome? I don't know who makes that, but Jesus Christ, please. And all this erectile dysfunction stuff, what in the hell happened in the past 5 years? Are men unable to get it up anymore every time you turn around? And everybody knows who has a sense God gave a goose. It has nothing to do with any clinical erectile dysfunction. It's from a bunch of half-wits who just say, well, I don't want to get into all that foreplay stuff. Hell, just let me pop a pill. That'll bring it right up, won't it? Huh? Let me just pop a pill. Restless leg syndrome. I've got your restless leg syndrome for you. From Meg in Memphis, regarding the vaccine in Texas, as I understand it, people can opt out of the vaccination if they have a moral opposition. But really, what kind of psycho would expose their little girl to cancer to make some kind of moral point? If a teenage girl is thinking about having sex, the last thing she's thinking is, gee, I better not or I might get cancer in 20 years. If she is thinking straight at all, the first thing she's going to think is, gee, I better not or I might get pregnant. Or if her self-esteem is lower, they might think, gee, if I don't do it, he won't like me. Unfortunately, the threat of STDs is not in the front of their minds. Most think it won't happen to them. Imagine a fundamentalist Christian, Meg writes, who won't let their daughter get this vaccine. The daughter takes her religion seriously and abstains, even if it means losing the boyfriend. Then the daughter gets raped and contracts HPV. What if the daughter isn't raped, but gets married and does her wifely duties as expected, but her husband turns out to be not so pious and has slept around enough to have contracted the virus, and then in turn gives it to his also Christian wife. 20 years later, she gets cancer and dies. What kind of monsters are these people? Referring to the Dominionists, the religious nutballs. And that's from Megan Memphis. Cassie is calling from Texas. Cassie, welcome to the program.
Hi,
Cassie. How are you? Haven't heard from you for a while. You live in Texas. What about this virus thing? Or, I mean, this immunization thing?
Hold on 1 second. I have to shut the speakerphone.
Okay.
Okay. I actually wrote about it on my blog.
Yeah.
This weekend.
Okay.
I wrote all about it. It turns out that people can decline to do it for any reason that they want.
Right.
So if somebody's allergic to the stuff in it, or if they think that they're, or if the parents don't want them to have it, or if there's a, you know, whatever other reason they don't want to do it, they can decline to do it. But most kids will get, most girls will get it. And it's actually, it's starting in sixth grade. If you're past sixth grade and you're up to 21, you can still get it.
Mm-hmm.
So for that first thing in 2007 and 2008, people like me who are 15, I mean, I already got it, but people who are 15 or 16 or 17 can get it also, even if they're not in sixth grade.
All right, let me ask you, since you're in the age group that this drug is targeted toward, are you confident? How old are you, Cassie?
I'm 15.
15.
And
are you?
And
you...
I did get all three shots.
Oh, you did get them. Are you confident that the drug is safe?
Yes. It's been used in other countries. It's not a brand new drug.
Do you have any problem with the governor of Texas just unilaterally ordering it?
I think it's the first good thing that he's done in a long time.
Okay. All right. Well, all right, Cassie. That's cool. I appreciate
it. But I wrote a whole article about it on my blog, and I quoted two other articles about
it. Where's your blog?
Freckles Cassie. It's one word, but freckles.cassie.wordpress.com.
.wordpress.com?
Yes.
Freckles.cassie.wordpress.com.
Right. And
all right.
It's the third article down.
All right. Thanks, Cassie.
Okay, thank you.
Talk
Bye.
To you later. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 7 past the hour. A couple of quick emails. Enough on the on Al Gore and Ralph Nader, really. I'll share these couple with you, and if I see it in the subject line, I'm just going to delete them. I did it again. I brought up that topic. And I know I piss everybody off when I bring it up. I'm sorry. This is from Craig in Tustin, California. Al Gore has to be responsible for Al Gore. It's his fault he lost. He didn't fight very hard in the aftermath of the vote, and he didn't run a very good campaign. Al Gore must work for his votes, and he didn't work hard enough in 2000. I never will apologize for voting for Nader. That's from Craig in Tustin, California. From Matt in North Plainfield, New Jersey. Mike, just a quick comment on the 2000 election. Even though Nader got 90,000 votes and Gore managed to lose by just a few hundred, always remember that 250,000 Democrats deserted Gore and voted for Bush in Florida, not to mention Gore didn't fight the way he should have to prove the election was stolen. If he ran on a more progressive platform, he probably would have won. Plus, the only reason Al Gore seems more green now is that he has gotten away from the corporations he used to be in bed with. And this is from Cece. Cece writes, in the 2000 election, if all the votes had been counted, Gore would still have won had it not been for the Republican operatives in the Supreme Court that stole the election. Also, you're assuming that in the 2000 election, all of the votes for Nader were taken from Gore. This is obviously not true, but we'll never know what percentage of them were. Gore wrote a good book, made a good movie, but he didn't vote in favor of environmentally friendly legislation as a senator. Also, Gore, along with Lieberman, were involved in the PMRC group in the late 80s, which tried to censor recorded music. Nader was dropped from the Green Party. That's why he had to run as an independent in 2004. Okay, last one. This is from Robert. This happens every time. This is from Robert. Mike, love you and the show, but I'm a Green Party member. Yes, there is a difference between Gore and Bush, But let's not forget that the election was stolen, not to mention that Gore lost his own state, and we need a third party. Remember, Hillary is a Democrat. From Robert. All right. Okay. All right. Y'all made your point. Okay. I'm sorry. I will back up. I've said 80 times I will never bring that issue up. And every time I bring it up, y'all take shots at me. And that's fair. I mean, that's cool. You folks are probably more right about the issue than I am. I just come at it emotionally. I understand. I know what Greg Palast has said. I understand how the election was stolen. Yada, 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 yada. I hate spoilers. I hate dogs in the manger, that sort of thing. And that's how I saw Nader. And I probably am seeing it wrong. So I can see the point. You win. The cervical cancer vaccine. Very quickly, this is from Stephen. Dear Mike, just wanted to give you some statistics from the CDC on the threat of human papilloma virus. 80% of women over 50 years old have HPV. 500,000 women around the world, mostly in developing countries, died from HPV in 2006. There are over 100 different strains of HPV, some cancers, others not. So if anybody has been diagnosed with HPV, they should get the vaccine anyway to prevent the other strains. The risk of cancer is not only applies to women. In some cases, men can contract life-threatening penile cancer. The governor of Texas, Stephen, writes, may be in bed with the pharmaceutical companies, and making this vaccine mandatory may infringe on civil liberties. But the facts are that this vaccine works 100% of the time and has the potential to wipe out another epidemic, such as smallpox and measles. I don't like the governor of Texas's politics, but this is the best decision that he has ever made. Stephen in his last name. Okay. That's another touchy issue. You know, you bring up Gore and Nader and Greens and Democrats, and you bring up vaccination. It's amazing. Talk about true believers on both sides of both of those topics. It's just impenetrable. That's kind of like, well, that's my attitude about Republicans. So we all have the impenetrable issues, don't we? All right, back to your phone calls quickly. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? I'm going to be really brief because I feel like the bear just got through eating on me.
I know that feeling, pal.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. I'm going to bed as soon as I get through talking, so I won't even go
okay.
To the show. But I have been looking into this vaccine order from Texas, and I'm not through with my work. But one thing I have found out is that Perry is going to make several hundred thousand dollars off of this thing. And so there is a greed factor involved. Also, I've been looking into the research on this virus, and there's still a lot of unproven questions on this thing that I'm trying to find out. So I think my advice to anybody is before you run out and get this thing, look at it and investigate it first. It might be good, it might be bad, but look at it really strong, because I've got a sneaky suspicion there's a skunk in the woodshed here.
Well, anytime I've just become so leery of energy companies, pharmaceutical companies, and defense contractors, that anytime I see a governor all of a sudden make a statement, a sweeping statement, or issue an order that financially benefits either one of those three industries, even though the end result may be that people benefit, I just get suspicious, that's all. So.
Well, you know, one thing I want to recall this fact, too. There is a a bacteria that's going around in hospitals and especially in nursing homes that is deadly, and it's being told not to be reported. And therefore, it could be on epidemic levels, and yet it's just not being reported, so therefore there is no epidemic. So now with this administration, you better look twice before you make your mind up that something's good that one of these people put out, because usually there's something behind it that's going to prove it to be a bad idea.
Well, that's kind of my attitude. Thanks, Arge. Get well.
Well, you too, Mike.
All right, take care. Take care. Email here from Terry on restless leg syndrome. Mike, I hate those commercials. And when did this so-called disease come about? How come all of a sudden? Does everyone have it? Should I watch out for it? And then Terry writes, and the only reason for all the erectile dysfunction, erectile dysfunction commercials and products is that the drug companies figured out that all those boomers are now taking the high blood pressure medication they make, which causes a side effect, which they have a cure for. Talk about a vicious cycle. Great show. Keep it up. Terry. Oh, she put in parentheses, no pun intended. All right. And then GC writes about the erectile dysfunction thing. GC writes, that was never a term before the Bill Clinton incident with Monica. The right-wingers were simply amazed and jealous of the performance of Bill Clinton's penis. Jealousy was the leading motivator in getting that product on the market, Mike. All right. Oh, Jesus. Yes, yes, Kabe.
I have to say, I really do get a kick out of those Insight commercials, though, with the guy that can't stop smiling.
Oh, those are funny. Yeah,
those are funny.
Yeah, yeah.
You stiff negotiator.
Oh, my God. I hate all of it. All right, I've got to get serious here for a second. When was it, Saturday? What's the date today, the 6th or the 5th? Today's the 5th, so it would have been Friday. Saturday, Sunday, yeah, Friday. The way the Times, New York Times, reported it, in a grim and powerful assessment of the future of the planet, the leading international network of climate scientists has concluded for the very first time that global warming is unequivocal, and that human activity is the main driver, causing most of the rise in temperatures since 1950. They said the world was in for centuries of climbing temperatures, rising seas, and shifting weather patterns. Unavoidable results of the buildup of heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere. Let me go on here. But the report released on Friday by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, said warming and its harmful consequences could be substantially blunted by prompt action. Achim Steiner, executive director of the United Nations Environmental Program, which administers the panel, along with the World Meteorological Organization, said, quote, in our daily lives, we all respond urgently to dangers that are much less likely than climate change to affect the future of our children, end quote. He said, February 2nd will be remembered as the date when uncertainty was removed as to whether humans had anything to do with climate change on this planet. The evidence is on the table. There's more. I want to share it with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
They can run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans, a form of suicide. Republicans suck!
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Back to the science panel report. Just a second here. Skip wrote in, hi, Mike, love your show. The former chief of staff for Rick Perry is now a lobbyist for Merck, which produces Gardasil. Curious. Follow the money. Yeah, thanks, Skip. So the report, last Friday, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, UN operation, released this report, and it's this panel's fourth assessment since 1990 on the causes and consequences of climate change, but it's the first time in which this group asserts with near certainty, they say with 90% confidence, that carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases from human activities have been the main cause of warming over the past half century. In this last report, 2001, the panel, which consists, by the way, of hundreds of scientists and reviewers, said the confidence level for its projections was likely, or 66 to 90%. Now they've revised it upward. The Bush administration, of course, said Friday when this report came out that the United States had played a leading role in studying and combating climate change. Can you believe that? Yes, we've been a leader in studying and combating climate change. Secretary of Energy Samuel Bodman rejected the idea of unilateral limits on emissions here in the United States. He said, quote, we are a small contributor. We are a small contributor to the overall pollution thing when you look at the rest of the world. So it's really got to be a global solution, end quote. Now, what's wrong with this dumb bastard? I mean, is there an eighth grader who doesn't know that the United States has about 5% of the world's population and we contribute 25% of the greenhouse gas emissions more than any other country on earth? And this Samuel Bodman says we're a small contributor? See, this is the problem. These rat bastards lie. They lie about everything, every single thing. And we're all supposed to sit here and go, bah, bah. Right. Bah. Oh, and Senator James Inhofe, the Oklahoma Republican, who has called the idea of dangerous human-driven warming a hoax. Immediately, when this report was released, issued a news release of his own headed Corruption of Science that rejected this report as a political document. No, don't say it, because we have a new affiliate tonight, and we have people listening, and if you say what's on your mind right now, you're just going to be a bad boy, so don't. The new report says the global climate is likely to warm 3.5 to 8 degrees Fahrenheit if carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere reach twice the levels of the year 1750, which is before the Industrial Revolution. Now, what happens if those levels are reached? Well, I have an answer to that. This is published in the Independent of the UK. First of all, it says that concentrations of carbon dioxide, this is all based on that report, in the atmosphere are at their highest levels for at least the last 650,000 years. Now, right away, the religious fundamentalists disregard that because nothing existed 650,000 years ago except darkness. But this says highest levels in the atmosphere of CO2 for at least the past 650,000 years, and this rise began with the birth of the Industrial Revolution 250 years ago. The panel went on to say that present levels of carbon dioxide, which continue to rise inexorably every year, are unprecedented for the long period of geological history that scientists are able to analyze from gas samples trapped in the frozen bubbles of deep ice cores. I'm sure most people who are not religious fundamentalists know what all that's about. Those huge, huge cores that come out of, it's a look back in time. Now, I know a lot of religious fundamentalists, oh, that's impossible. What are you talking about? Gas bubbles trapped from a million years ago? Oh, there was no, disregard that, please. But the panel points to a potentially more sinister development. The rate of increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is beginning to accelerate. Uh-oh. Between 1960 and 2005, the average rate at which carbon dioxide concentrations increased was about 1.4 parts per million per year. But when the figures are analyzed more closely, it becomes apparent that there has been a recent rise in this rate of increase to 1.9 ppm per year between 1995 and 2005. Now, when we come back after the break, I just want to share with you what that will mean, okay? Oi, you may not want to hear this. Stick around if you want to. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
The globe is warming. You gotta burn down the brush. You gotta turn on the heat. W's got a mission, W's got a plan, W's got a pistol, it's burning in his hand.
The dream in solar energy.
technology is to develop technology so that someday your house is like a little generating plant. It's possible to capture the sun, feed it into your house. I think that's a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah, okay, George. Now, back to this report. I've just got to get this out here. This rate of increase of these heat-trapping gases, the rate of increase that they're going into the atmosphere, the rate is increasing. And according to the article I'm quoting from in the Independent of the UK, it's too early to explain this increase. But one fear is that it may indicate a change in the way the Earth is responding to global warming. In other words, climate feedbacks that accelerate the rate of change may have kicked in. Now, the report from the IPCC points out that as the planet gets warmer, the natural ability of the land and the oceans to absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere begins to get weaker. It's estimated that about half of all the man-made emissions of carbon dioxide have been taken out of the air and absorbed by natural carbon sinks on the land and in the sea. Many computer models of the climate predict that as the Earth continues to get warmer, these sinks will become less able to absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. That means that more carbon dioxide will be left in the air to exacerbate the greenhouse effect, so leading to further temperature rises and more global warming, which in turn will make the natural carbon sinks of the Earth even less efficient. Good God. A feedback loop. So, if you want to be a Chicken Little, like I tend to be about this issue, or an alarmist, like I tend to be about this issue, then the report from the IPCC, the UN report, is, if anything, conservative. It's low key. It's like, oh, it's horrible, but not really horrible. I think what the IPCC is trying to do here is to get something out that is palatable to the largest number of people without causing most of us to run screaming into the woods. But now listen, according to yesterday's UN report, the world will be a much hotter place by 2100. No, I won't be here and neither will you. Well, some of the people listen. No, nobody listening will be here unless there's some weird science between now and then. But your kids will. Your grandchildren will. Here's the impact. If the temperature goes up 2.4 degrees Fahrenheit, coral reefs will be almost extinct. In North America, a new dust bowl brings deserts to life in the high plains states centered on Nebraska, but also wipes out agriculture and cattle ranching as sand dunes appear across five U.S. states from Texas in the south to Montana in the north. Rising sea levels accelerate as the Greenland ice sheet tips into irreversible melt, submerging atoll nations and low-lying deltas. In Peru, disappearing Andean glaciers mean 10 million people face water shortages. Warming seas wipe out the Great Barrier Reef in Australia and make coral reefs virtually extinct throughout the tropics. Worldwide, a third of all species on the planet face extinction. That's if the temperature goes up 2.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Or is it Celsius? I'm not sure. For the sake of argument, let's call it Fahrenheit, but it may be Celsius. And there's a difference there. If it goes up 3.4 degrees, rainforest turns to desert. The Amazonian rainforest burns in a firestorm of catastrophic ferocity, covering South America with ash and smoke. Once the smoke clears, the interior of Brazil has become desert, and huge amounts of extra carbon have entered the atmosphere, further boosting global warming. The entire Arctic ice cap disappears in the summer months, leaving the North Pole ice-free for the first time in 3 million years. Polar bears, walruses, and ringed seals all go extinct. Water supplies run short in California as the Sierra Nevada snowpack melts away. Tens of millions are displaced as the Kalahari Desert expands across southern Africa. If the mean temperature goes up 4.4 degrees, rapidly rising temperatures in the Arctic put Siberian permafrost in the melt zone, releasing vast quantities of methane and CO2. Global temperatures keep on rising rapidly in consequence. Melting ice caps and sea level rises displace more than 100 million people, particularly in Bangladesh, the Nile Delta, and Shanghai. Heat waves and drought make much of the subtropics uninhabitable. Large-scale migration even takes place within Europe, where deserts are growing in southern Spain, Italy, and Greece. More than half of wild species are wiped out in the worst mass extinction since the end of the dinosaurs. Agriculture collapses in Australia. If the average temperature goes up 5.4 degrees, the West Antarctic ice sheet breaks up, eventually adding another 5 meters to global sea levels. If these temperatures are sustained, the entire planet will become ice-free and sea levels will rise 70 meters higher than today. South Asian society collapses due to the disappearance of glaciers in the Himalayas, drying up the Indus River, while in East India and Bangladesh, monsoon floods threaten millions. Super El Niños spark global weather chaos. Most of humanity begins to seek refuge away from higher temperatures closer to the poles. Tens of millions of refugees forced their way into Scandinavia and the British Isles. World food supplies run out. And the last one. 6.4 degree increase in global temperature. Most of life is exterminated. Warming seas lead to the possible release of methane hydrates trapped in sub-oceanic sediments. Methane fireballs tear across the sky, causing further warming. The oceans lose their oxygen and turn stagnant, releasing poisonous hydrogen sulfide gas, and destroying the ozone layer. Deserts extend almost to the Arctic. Hypercanes, hurricanes of unimaginable ferocity, circumnavigate the globe, causing flash floods which strip the land of soil. Humanity reduced to a few survivors eking out a living in polar refuges. Most of life on Earth has been snuffed out as temperatures rise higher than it has for hundreds of millions of years. This sounds like the extinction level event. Busta Rhymes' prediction. When did he release that? Back in the 90s? Jesus, God. Now, this is all junk science and lies. It's trash and crap. It doesn't mean anything. It's a put-on. Huh? Right? It's all a put-on. ExxonMobil. This is according to politicalaffairs.net. Joel Wendland writing there. Have an opinion on global warming? ExxonMobil-funded right-wing think tank American Enterprise Institute might pay you to smear the report published by the United Nations Committee that points out what most people have long understood. Not only is global warming real, but humans play a big role in causing it. Now, you could get $10,000. According to recent media reports, the American Enterprise Institute, which has received $1.6 million from ExxonMobil, and which is widely considered to be little more than a mouthpiece for Bush administration policies, sent a letter. AEI sent a letter to a number of scientists and economists offering the payment, along with additional stipends for travel and other expenses, to criticize the report. The report, the world's most respected collection of experts put out by the world's most respected collection of experts on global warming, links temperature increases in the recent decades to human activities such as the emission of greenhouse gases caused by the use of fossil fuels like petroleum and coal. It goes, oh my God, it goes on. You can find this at politicalaffairs.net. American Enterprise Institute, is that right? See, to me, since the survival of the human race is at stake here, why are these people not taken out and eliminated? Who do I mean by these people? The people at the American Enterprise Institute, the people at ExxonMobil or the other big companies that have spent millions in denying the truth. Now, by eliminated, what do I mean? Am I suggesting mass killing? No, of course not. Just eliminated from the ability to have any influence on public discourse, thought, of any sort, along with the people being eliminated, of course, would be Rush Limbaugh and his clones. The damage that these people have done, it's mind-boggling. Unless you want to believe that Limbaugh and the American Enterprise Institute and ExxonMobil are right, and hundreds of scientists and climatologists around the world are wrong. I mean, it's one or the other.
Trust in God and corporations. They stand for piety.
Every time we use a homegrown fuel, we'll be going to help our farmers. Someday a president is going to pick up the crop report, and they're going to say we're less dependent on foreign sources of energy.
Oh, shut up.
I hate Republicans. I hate Republicans, baby, again.
Our most abundant energy source is coal,
yet coal also prevents an environmental challenge.
Ten before the hour. Remember, it was the people at the American Enterprise Institute, along with the people at the Project for New American Century, who brought us this splendid little war in Iraq. And at American Enterprise Institute, according to Chris Floyd, writing at truthout.org, the coffers there are bulging with funding from ExxonMobil, former honcho, Lee Raymon, former head of ExxonMobil, is now the vice chairman of the board of trustees of the American Enterprise Institute. It's just, you know, I wonder sometimes why we, you know, you and me, why we allow this to go on. We're not stupid. You know, we're not. We talk about this every night. You and I do these issues. You talk about it in your circle of friends. I talk about it in mine. I talk about my kids. You talk about your kids, your parents, whatever. And yet we don't do anything. By anything, I mean something radical and drastic and consequential. Something that is profound. Something that just ends this madness. And I don't know what I'm suggesting, but by God, I'm suggesting something. But we're not doing anything. I'm not. And that really bothers me. It bothers me profoundly, and I think to myself, but what are you going to do, Malloy? Are you going, if you were a millionaire, would you fund a think tank and put out a competing idea? Oh, that'll work. Okay. Are you going to invent some sort of alternative fuel? Yeah, okay. Check that one off. So what are you going to do to stop this, Malloy? In a different time, a different place, when people were specifically doing things that were harming the tribe, they were eliminated. They were the tribe said, no, you know, you can't do this because we'll all die. All 86 of us will die here. So we're going to leave you here in the desert where you can die and the rest of us will survive because you have been a bad person. You have brought disease into the tribe, or you have brought a negativity into the tribe that is killing us, or you have brought a toxic substance into the tribe, or you have provoked a war with the tribe on the other side of the desert that is threatening us all. So because of what you've done, we are eliminating you. Because we want to survive. And we've tried to reason with you, and you won't listen. So, we're moving on without you. I mean, isn't that the way it used to work? Or have I read too much Carlos Castaneda? Isn't that the way it used to work? Not just Castaneda, you know what I'm saying. But we don't do that. We allow people who are threatening the entire human species. We allow them multi-million dollar jobs as radio talk show hosts, as heads of institutes that fill the airwaves and the newspapers with lies and deceit and fraud, all of which ultimately, well, it won't kill us. It's going to kill our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. It's going to kill the earth. It's going to kill, murder, everything. It's going to just kill it, smash it, destroy it. But we don't do anything. And I think about that sometimes when I'm out for my walk. And I'm walking the trails out here in these woods near where I live, and I just think to myself, the tribe just says, global warming. Okay, well, that's too big for me. There's nothing I can do about it. The report issued by IPCC, IPCC. The report leaves the door open for the human race just to crack and says that if something is done now to bring an end to what we have done since the Industrial Revolution to our nest, our house, our home, Earth, if something is done now, something being a massive, massive global effort to end the emissions we're dumping into the atmosphere. Things will continue for a certain length of time to get worse and worse and worse. But eventually they'll get better. If we do nothing, then it's over. And no, I won't be alive to see it, and neither will you. But Jesus H. Christ, is this what we're going to leave as our legacy to just 2-3 generations down the road? Is that, oh my God, is that what we're going to do? I mean, think back to my mother, who's now dead, was born in 1915. Her generation, if her generation had been told, if you don't do something, by the turn of the 21st century, Earth is going to end. I would imagine those people would have done something. They would have, what the hell are we doing? What are we doing? I know. We haven't been taking phone calls the first 2 hours here. I apologize for that, but just so much. I hate it when I'm forced to take a day off because of a cold or whatever. Hold on, had to reach over and turn off the little space heater. It is colder than a well digger's ass here in Atlanta, I will guarantee you. And the studio, this is the draftiest studio I think we've ever had. I hate to take time off, but we're taking a week off next week. We will not be here. That'll be our first break since the end of October. So this week, we're here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're taking off Friday and all of next week. Little R&R. Actually, we're going to go visit the grandkids. That's not rest and relaxation. Well, it's, you know, it's fun, though. All right. This is from today. While the Senate was debating his illegal occupation of Iraq, Chuckle Nuts held a cabinet meeting to talk about his budget, which I hope we can get to tonight. It's horrifying. He then took a couple of questions from reporters. First reporter said, Mr. President, you oppose setting timelines for withdrawal in Iraq, yet your new budget plan assumes that war spending will be down to $50 billion by 2009 and none beyond that. Are you in effect, sir, and excuse me because I'm really a dumbass here, are you setting a timeline for the end of the war?
There will be no timetable set. And the reason why is because we don't want to send mixed signals to an enemy or to a struggling democracy or to our troops. We've had years of projections in the past. We've said to the Congress, here's what our anticipated expenditure is in the short term, and we've been able to manage our budgets with 5 years of war behind us, and we'll manage the budgets in the out years.
Can you believe this guy? The only reason I play this garbage, this crap, this filth, this vomit anymore on this program, and if it really offends you, I don't blame you if you want to tune out. The only reason I play it is to demonstrate to myself and to you how horrifying it is to have this piglet as the President of the United States. The sound of his voice, his sentence structure, his subject matter, his syntax, all of it. Just, I don't know. It makes me want to just smash things. Does it do that to you? The next reporter, this is the last one. The next reporter asks about the even greater level of violence since his New Way Forward plan in Iraq has been enacted. Now, this sadistic monkey says that the fact that the Iraqis are anxious and scared is a good sign. In other words, wait until they're in full-blown PTSD. That'll be really great, right? As soon as all Iraqis are mad, when they're all suffering from post or immediate traumatic stress disorder, that'll be really great. The reporter stands there like the half-ass that he is, or she is, and says, Mr. President, how do you respond to some criticism from the Iraqis that the reason for the recent escalation of violence in Iraq is because the United States has failed to implement its new strategy?
I appreciate the fact that the Iraqi government is anxious to get security inside the capital of the country. It's a good sign. It's a good sign that there's a sense of concern and anxiety.
Oh, God.
What we're trying to do with this reinforcement of our troops is to provide enough space so that the Iraqi government can meet certain benchmarks or certain requirements for a unity government to survive and for the country to be strong.
Oh, Christ.
I listened to a lot of people in Congress as to whether or not we ought to slowly withdraw and redeploy troops. My worry about that was that the capital would get worse, and out of that chaos would come grave danger to the United States.
Oh, my God.
That's why I made the decision I made, and we're in the process of implementing that plan. We'd like to do it as quickly as possible.
Oh, Jesus. It's a good sign that there's a sense of concern and anxiety. He says, yeah, he loves all the psychological trauma that we're causing. Great fun. Cheney's loving it, too. Millions of people being treated like rats by this filthy bastard. He says, what we're trying to do with this reinforcement of our troops is to provide enough space. Enough space? Enough space? How many Rockies died over the weekend? 138? How many died today? Another 20, 30, 40? Who counts? I know. Four helicopters, U.S. helicopters down. The death and this destruction that this mad bastard is causing is just unbelievable. We like to do it as quickly as possible. Well, what's the holdup? You've got the surge in there. What are you waiting for? We're in the process of implementing that plan. What plan? You don't have a plan. Oh, God. On the Senate floor, just several hours ago, there was a fairly intense debate going on before any real debate on Iraq resolutions was allowed. The Senate voted 49-47, well shy of the 60 votes needed to move ahead on one of the war resolutions. These people are just make my head hurt. Kate Phillips writing for somebody, I'm sorry, I don't know who, but it's her words. She writes, even prominent senators like John Warner, Republican of Virginia and premier author of the resolution, backed by the Democratic leadership, and Chuck Hagel, Republican of Nebraska and persistent critic of the administration's Iraq policies, voted with their party senators to block debate on the John Warner, Carl Levin resolution. As Minority Leader Mitch McConnell explained on and off the floor today, the Republicans want all resolutions debated, including the one offered by Senator McCain. Oh, yeah, we want them all, but no, we don't. But yes, we do. 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 Republicans are filthy, subhuman bastards, especially the ones in the United States Senate and the U.S. House. All right, let's have a little of the sound. Senator Harry Reid talking about the debate on the Iraq resolution, opposing Bush's murderous escalation of the war. Reid explains how the Republican Party, the Republicans in the Senate, have chosen politics over the lives of our troops and progress in Iraq is thwarted, and the Republicans are blocking a debate on a non-binding resolution to oppose Bush's escalation in Iraq and our meddling in Iraqi civil war we helped foment. And the horror of all this is that in a sane world, I would say this is just BS. Who cares about a non-binding resolution? Who gives a damn? But you see, I live in a parallel universe now where up is down and sanity is madness and black is white. And the Democratic Party leadership refuses to impeach this rotten son of a bitch. And the Republican Party leadership is as corrupt and venal as it's always been. We'll have Harry Reid. Jesus, did I do it again? I'm sorry, Kathy. We'll have Harry Reid as soon as we come back. How the Republican Party, Republicans in the Senate, have chosen politics over the lives of our troops. Now, who's going to report it that way? Who's going to say these filthy Republican pigs want more American soldiers to die, much less Iraqi civilians? God, I hate them.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
We did not believe in the writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run.
21 past the hour. Okay, let's do Harry Reid explaining here during the debate today how the Republicans in the Senate have chosen politics over the lives of our troops and progress in Iraq in blocking the debate on this non-binding resolution. This is Harry Reid.
I'm prepared to defend the resolution that I've offered with Senators Warner, Collins, and Levin. I'm prepared to vote on the McCain resolution, and I'm prepared for the debate because its time has come. So I ask my colleagues, if not now, when? If not now, do we wait for more troops to die before we oppose the president's plan? If not now, do we wait for more violence, more unrest, more danger for our troops before we act? This comes down to if you support an escalation or not. And the American people deserve this debate. For me, the question is, will the Senate lead? Will the Senate express its opposition to the surge? I say that on an issue of this magnitude, an issue this important, it's critical for the Senate to speak with the strongest voice possible. Generating a revised resolution with broader appeal was putting our best foot forward in securing the strongest bipartisan vote possible. But it seems that even when it comes to the lives of our troops, partisanship prevails. Here we are, after weeks of negotiations, after weeks of public proclamations, after weeks of consideration, we're about to witness the minority choose politics over progress.
Well, there's a way to get around that, Senator Reid. Essentially, what you're saying is true. Republicans don't care about human life. They're bastards. They're murderers. Murderers. They are global rapists. They are thugs. There's a way to bypass all this, Senator Reid. Impeach the sons of bitches! Sit down with your counterpart in the House, Madam Speaker, and remove these bastards from office. Quit playing head games with me, Senator Reid. Yeah. I don't like you, Senator, because of what you are doing. I don't give a good goddamn about the rules of the Senate. The survival of this country and this planet are at stake, and you are playing these little dicky word games with these filthy Republicans in the Senate. You are standing there making these pronouncements and these unctuous sounding statements. I couldn't care less. I don't like you, Senator Reid. Senator Charles Schumer explains how the lack of debate on the illegal Iraq war has led us to this mess, stressing why debate now is more important than ever to save the lives of our troops and innocent Iraqi civilians.
The lack of debate on this war in this Senate, in this administration, and in this country has led to the muddle, the debacle that we are now in, where 70% of the people don't support this war, and most experts you talk to say, what is the strategy? We don't seem to have one. When General Shinseki, 3 years ago, said we needed more troops, there was no debate. When CIA agents and others said there weren't mass weapons of mass destruction, they said, we don't need debate. When this war devolved from fighting terror and removing Saddam Hussein into a war that was a civil war, with our young men and women policing the age-old hatred between the Shiites and the Sunnis, there was no debate. And that is why we are in the sad state we are in right now.
No, it isn't, Senator. We are in the sad state that we are in because the Democrats in the House and the Senate continue to allow these murderous sons of bitches in the executive branch to continue. Debacle? Is that what you said, Charles? Debacle? Debacle. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Silence is failing me. No, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. It takes a lifetime to learn what's in the rest. Why are we all fighting? Huh? Why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong. Forgetting where we've come.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 26 before the hour. Last one, Senator Charles Schumer again on the Senate debate on the Iraq resolution, opposing Bush's escalation and continuing murder spree. The serial killer, son of a bitch. Schumer, in this soundbite, continues to whine about how the Republicans are blocking debate on the single most important issue facing America at this point in history. And the Republican Party is saying it's off the table. And believe it or not, these miserable, piteous Democrats don't know what to do.
Senator Reid has offered both resolutions. The one by the senator from Arizona and the one by the senator from Virginia, both Republican resolutions. Do you support this so-called surge, this escalation, or do you not? And when it comes to war, it should be all about it more than any single other issue. And here we are at this sorry moment. We're on the most important issue that's faced this Senate in quite a while. We are saying, at least those on the other side of the aisle, no debate, no discussion.
Oh, stop it, Charles. Get the rest of your Democrats together and walk the hell out of the Senate. Walk out. Go home. Visit your grandchildren. Go fishing. Bring this miserable goddamn government to a halt. You want to know what to do? You piss poor Senator Schumer. Don't give us this. Oh, we don't know what to do. Walk out! Or stay there and continue to enable this crime family to do its work. I am so sick of Democrats. God, I wish I weren't one. But I am. They don't know what to do. Newt Gingrich knew what to do, didn't he? When was it, 96? When he brought the government to an absolute halt. But the Democrats don't know what to do. I'm losing faith, truth seeker. Bush has been found in the United States District Court in Detroit to have, quote, undisputedly violated the Constitution of the United States, as well as the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Law against warrantless eavesdropping. And what are the Democrats talking about? This rat bastard has committed impeachable offenses. What do the Democrats need to have happen? What? Well, there's plenty you can do, Mr. Schumer. There's plenty you can do, Mr. Reed. There's plenty you can do, Mrs. Pelosi. You can bring this to an end tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Just walk out. Just walk out. No legislation, no appropriations, no debate, nothing! But you won't do it. And I know you won't do it, and America knows you won't do it, and you know you won't do it. And I'll tell you what, you know what's going to happen to you, Democrats? You're going to be defeated in 2008 because America has had its guts full of this crap. It's astonishing. I listened to the leading lights of my Democratic Party standing up there today. I listened to it today on C-SPAN. I couldn't believe it. I wanted to listen to Chuck Hagel, not Charles Schumer. Unbelievable. So they blame it on the Republicans and say, well, you know, the Republicans won't let this come up for debate. The Republicans are going to do what Republicans always do, Charles, Harry. They are obstructionist little piglets. But you guys are supposed to be the ones to stop this. You are the ones that we gave the power to. You are the ones that we said, we can't stand this anymore. Here, we'll give you the majority in the House. We'll give you the majority in the Senate. And if you can handle it, we'll give you the presidency in 2008. But goddammit, do something! And what have you done? Nothing. Meantime, your leading light, Senator Clinton, gives a speech before AIPAC where she sounds exactly like Dick Cheney. Exactly. You can't get daylight between her and Dick Cheney. Oh, my God. Okay. All right. Let's do some phone calls. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hi. Hey, Mike. It's a bittersweet symphony.
It's a what?
It's a bittersweet symphony.
A bittersweet symphony? What? I'm not sure what. Oh, that's a song title. That's right. Never mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whenever there's good news, there's plenty of bad news to bog it down.
Well, I'm trying to get my mind around the good news, and I'm not sure what the good news is. What is it? Quick, tell me.
You and I are on the same page, Ben. I mean, I keep hearing the optimists, and I try to be an optimist, but I'm hearing the optimist saying, you know, there's the light at the end of the tunnel. as much as my youth and vitality can muster, I just can see a dim red haze.
Oh, God. You know, back in the day, we used to say that light at the end of the tunnel that the Nixon criminals talked about where it concerned Vietnam was really an onrushing freight train. And I think at this point in our history, we're probably looking at the same thing, an onrushing freight train.
Well, I think as progressives, we need to show some level of, some kind of optimism. And, you know, I understand your position, and if I said I had a different position, I'd be lying. But I think as progressives, we need to just, I don't want to say live in a fantasy world, but at least try to keep some flame deep down in our guts lit that maybe for some reason something like something on the political spectrum of the Baltimore Colts leaving for Indianapolis, except this time it's the Democrats turning from a bunch of testicless nothings to a bunch of men with big guns.
Look, I understand what you're saying, but one thing I'm not good at all is some sort of Pollyanna-ish attitude of, I'm going to keep my spirits up because eventually I know that everything will be okay, and we can all go home and say, whoo, boy, that was close. No, I can't do that. I look at the reality, or I think I'm looking at reality. Maybe I'm not. But I think I'm looking at the reality of my Democratic Party, and what I'm seeing is a bunch of wimps standing there. They kept saying that things would change when they became the majority, and now they can't even get a simple-ass non-binding resolution through the Senate?
What do you say?
If they can't get a non-binding resolution through the Senate, then they can't do anything!
You're right, man. And you know,
so no, I'm sorry, I cannot, Matthew, be optimistic about that. I can't do it.
I to be honest with you, I can't really be that much either. But you know, all they have to do is walk out, and they can't even do it.
Well, at least we agree with that. All right, Matthew, thanks. I appreciate what you had to say, and I also appreciate your. I appreciate your attitude, but I just don't share it. I can't. Maybe it's because I'm probably four times your age. I don't know. And I'm not pulling an age trip on you. A lot of people are a hell of a lot younger than me who are a lot smarter than I am. But one thing that you gather in with age is cynicism. You can't help but have that happen to you. Can't help it. And when I look at these Democrats in the Senate, who, by the way, are all just about my age. When I look at these Democrats in the Senate and the House, and I hear what they're saying now they're, but in the Senate today, now that they're the majority party, and I hear them wimping and weaseling and gasping and you know, chicken crapping their way out of everything because they, for some reason, they just can't get this together. And I see the Republicans exerting as much power now as when they were in the minority. What's going to happen when Bush nominates another Nazi for the federal bench somewhere? What are the Democrats going to do then? We'll be right back. Hour. Thanks to the crew tonight. Billy Foster engineered the program and handled your phone calls tonight. Ian was off. Thanks, Billy. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Mark Marshall is our webmaster. And deep thanks to the militant moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the message board who cracked the whip. Catherine Bay is our executive producer. And again, please, a personal appeal, go to NovamRadio.com and sign up for the downloads and the podcasts and all the stuff that's offered there. And a chance to win 10 grand. You can't sniff at that. This is the age of Bush. Do it for your humble and obedient servant, NovamRadio.com. We need your support. It's that simple. Toby is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Toby.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
I did my laundry while I was waiting. I was calling to... Are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm just coughing.
Okay, well, me too, because I was going to talk to you about the Democrats and just want you to know that I knew it was all over when Harry Reid told us all that the Miss America pageant was going to be in Nevada. Now, since I only have a minute... And I have no time to kvetch, and I consider you sort of your reporter at large in the Bay Area,
yeah.
Where I would be considered middle of the road.
Yeah.
I have two simple references from the low-tech generation.
Okay.
Okay. As for the Republicans and the Democrats, who are schmucks. Oh, did I say the word schmuck? I'd like to refer you to a case. You ready?
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Kathy, you ready?
She's ready.
Is Molly ready?
She's asleep.
Okay. The name of the case is Schmuck Be Dumb.
Schmuck Be Dumb?
Right. Okay. Fifth District, North 6133. It's a 1983 case out of the Ohio Appellate Court.
Yeah.
And I want our Democrat, honest to God, I am not BSing you. It is S, it's spelled S-C-H-M-U-C-K-V, dumb.
It's a real case?
Honest to God, I can print it out. Go Google it.
Schmuck.
I mean, you get lazy with Google. Five District, shall I repeat it or you don't care?
Schmuck versus dumb?
D-U-M-M.
D-U-M-M.
Fifth District. Number 613.
No. Nobody cares about it. Nobody's writing that
down.
Okay,
fine. I'll go on to my next little thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, it's a quickie.
All right,
hold on. Okay, in Rome.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a bit of a, a history freak.
Yeah.
A long time before the Christian right, was, they call it the advent of the Christian Bible.
Yeah.
Romans would, quote, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yeah, what'd they swear on?
Their testicles.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
that's where we get the term testimony.
That's right. I remember my Latin teacher telling us high school kids that while we all sat there and turned red and giggled.
Right. And far be it for me to leave it on a friendly schmuck be dumb note, I have been dying to say this, and you're going to let me, I hope. Your caller said, well, try, which is that fellow who comes on in the middle of the day, Ed, what's his name?
Schultz.
Peanut Schultz?
Yeah.
Ed Schultz?
Yeah.
Bunch of shuck and jive.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Toby.
And that's not even a case.
All right. Toby, thank you. You have enlightened me this evening and made my life a little lighter. Thank you, Toby. I appreciate it. I remember that testimony thing she was talking about. Yeah, they would grab their scrotums and swear to tell. That's the truth. Kathy's looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? No, that's the truth.
So what is Michael Jackson doing down there?
It's late. It's very late. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon. All right, Joe, is normally you have about a minute.
Oh, well, yes, thank you. That's mighty white of you. But isn't that wonderful that the guys like Rush Limbaugh and the rest of them, they just love these blackhead coaches from the Super Bowl yesterday because they're both a couple of Jesus freaks. They're Jesus freaks, man. Haven't you seen them all day talking about?
Well, I read something today, or I heard something today, that after the Colts won, or before the game, I guess it was after the game, maybe it was Peyton Manning, but somebody thanked God for the win. And, of course, whenever I hear something like that, I just want to take a claw hammer and attack whoever says it. Like God is paying attention to the Super Bowl. But that's what these people are like. I don't know if it was the coaches or Peyton Manning. But when I heard this, it just makes me once again.
That was the coach.
It was a coach. It makes me so happy that I don't believe or participate in this horse crap.
Well, I'm an evangelical agnostic myself. And the Democrats could take a lesson from Donald Trump, of all people, because he has come out against this war, and he said right before the election, anybody supporting this war should be thrown out of office.
Donald Trump is I don't know, Donald Trump
I
is
like
a,
the guy, though.
He's
I
wretched.
Like
he's a wretched excuse of a human being.
But the Democrats could take a lesson from him and say to Bush, defy it.
Yeah, well,
thank you.
I appreciate it. I wanted to play some music tonight by John Neems, who has a new album out, a new CD out, In Your Dreams, and we didn't get to it. We will do it tomorrow night. We're about out of time, aren't we, Kathy? Sorry to have left so many people on hold tonight, but you know, like I say, that's when I miss a Friday. Come Monday, there's just so much that has backlogged. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? We're off Friday coming and all next week. So, and again, welcome to the listeners in Eureka, California, 1480 on the dial. We do appreciate it. Thank you so much for picking up the program. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.